The question before us this morning is, how can we thrive instead of just survive? And I think that it's very important to draw a distinction between these two states of being and becoming. Now, during the Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's holiday period, we very often see stories in the paper or magazines or programs on television about how to survive the holidays. The emphasis is definitely on survival. And I suppose that many of us feel that that's about all that we have the energy for at that time of year. And frankly, I'm not sure I've ever heard anything about thriving during the holidays. Maybe if you're on the receiving end of a lot of gifts, that might be considered thriving. But the emphasis, again, is on surviving. It's more about getting by, somehow getting through it all. It's a kind of bottom line approach to living. And I suspect that often we live the rest of our lives just like that, in terms of what it is that we need just to get through the day, to get through the week. And I'm assuming that that may be the reason that coffee was invented, certainly for people in the workplace. Let me just get through the day. Maybe that's all we can handle much of the time. And certainly there are times in our lives when we are beset with worry and trouble. We may be depressed and discouraged. We may have lost a job. We may be having difficulty communicating with people close to us. We may be grieving. There may be problems on the job and we feel emotionally drained. We feel that we barely have the energy just to go through the motions. And how at a time like that, when we feel so discouraged, so overwhelmed, can we think about thriving? How can we emphasize something that is so much more positive, so far beyond simply getting by? I'm especially mindful of this since my forced retirement because of health issues. And I have seen how my life has become much more a matter of focusing on survival, dealing with problems with my physical well-being, and the psychological issues that go along with chronic illness and pain. Much of the time, I felt that I didn't have a lot of energy or strength to do more than just survive. And I see how it has worn me down. I see how it's affected me and my relationships. And I also recognize how, at times, I've been able to cope with the situation in a way that I really was able to thrive. And I stand before you today telling you that I didn't just survive that crash. I am thriving here today. What I want to do today, in fact, is to encourage the kind of thinking, the kind of behaving, the kind of visioning, if you will, something that we can learn and practice, that we can encourage one another to do, that emphasizes thriving rather than just surviving. And I believe that our lives can be immeasurably richer when our emphasis is on thriving rather than on just surviving. One of the things that we might do as we shift our thinking is to consider what challenges us most in our lives. What are the challenges that you're facing today? For some of you, you're probably trying to crowd out the thoughts of all those other challenges to simply be here in the room, physically or mentally. But think for a moment, what are the ones that are really at the top of the list? What kinds of challenges do you face today, this week? I would invite you to think about the challenges, not the burdens, not the struggles, but to think of them in terms of possibilities and opportunities. It's all in the interpretation, isn't it? And ultimately, our choice in how to react and act. How to choose. What's the difference in practical terms between thriving and surviving for you? Do you see that distinction in your own life? Well, of course, it's all relative. To us, surviving may mean going away for the weekend, getting by without our hair dryer that we left at home. It may mean missing a meal. And we know that so many other people, not just in faraway lands, but right here, in this very area, there are people who are surviving at a much more basic level. And in your own way, you are doing something about it. You're taking up the challenge, you're seeing the opportunity, you're putting yourself out, you're making a contribution. When we're in the midst of our own struggles, however, it's very difficult to think in terms of other people's survival. And I've come to believe that there are five areas in our lives that we ought to focus on when we consider surviving and thriving. We need to look at the intellectual dimension, first of all. The emotional dimension, the spiritual, the social, and the physical realms of our lives. And of course, there is an interplay between all of this. And ultimately, it is a question of balance, a question of choosing for each one of us. Let's consider first the intellectual realm. For me, survival in the intellectual realm means having the simple freedom to inquire. This is a place that supports that. This community enables my survival and much more. That's really the baseline for me. The freedom to inquire, to question. And how about for you? The ability to have awareness of the world around you. The freedom to ask questions, for most of us, I suspect, that is surviving. Whereas to ask questions that go beyond the mere surface, to become involved in real interaction and commitment to solutions, that may be thriving for us. If the freedom of inquiry, the opportunity to ask questions, to have information available to us, is the survival mode, then what might we see as the thriving dimension? For me, it's the mastery of new knowledge, being acquainted with new areas of information, being able to explore in ways that I may never have considered before, connecting with another person, and exploring together. Yesterday provided a great example of that for me, where I met someone that I've communicated with for some time online and on the phone, and I finally met this person, and he's a naval officer, and without knowing it, he's a UU. And I was doing some missionary work, as it turned out, and encouraging him to attend our church in San Diego. But I realized, you know, throughout the week, once I realized I was going to be okay and I was getting cared for and kind of shaking off that horrible dread, that feeling of vulnerability and just, you know, being totally shaken, I got to celebrate being alive by being with people who really matter a lot to me. And then there was this new person finally getting to meet and talk and finding that it was the most invigorating experience. And I said, I want to thank you for helping me complete this week in a way that I have gone beyond survival. And this is thriving. For me, it's in the interaction, the sparring, the discussing, having that freedom. So what is the bottom line for you in the intellectual dimension of your life? What is surviving for you intellectually? Anyone have a thought about that? It's the freedom not to answer when someone puts you on the spot. In this community, I think growth is at that survival level. We take that as something that is very hard to live without. We may take it for granted. Well, what's thriving then? Can you see a distinction between the two intellectually? Where does the thriving come in for you in the intellectual realm? Enjoying your growth, perhaps? Sharing it with other people who are excited about it too? One of the things that we say in our Unitarian Universalist congregations so often is that we want intellectual stimulation. And it seems to me that stimulation should not just come from the pulpit. It can't just come from the minister. But it is available to us in our community as we involve ourselves in one another's lives. We have those opportunities to stimulate and be stimulated. And let us be grateful for that. There's also an opportunity in the emotional realm in this kind of religious community as well. For me, the bottom line emotionally is to experience self-affirmation. And based upon my own experience in dealing with a lot of people in many different situations, but particularly in a counseling setting, I see how often even that survival mode is not operating. So many people, and there are some of us here this morning, are still struggling with the very idea of self-affirmation and self-worth, that we have worth and value at all as human beings. Some of us mask that very well. But that's the point of survival for some of us. This may be one of the greatest struggles to be alive, to believe that we have a place and a purpose, struggling with that lifelong issue that many of us face, believing on some deeper level, if they only knew, somehow they might find out that I'm just no damn good when you get right down to it. And we come here sometimes, many times, I suspect, and we put on our pleasant faces and we behave in a socially acceptable way, for which I'm personally grateful. And yet, on the educational, or rather the emotional level, we are wanting. We're struggling to keep our heads above water. How do we move then from the mere survival mode to the thriving emotionally? What might we do beyond the simple self-affirmation? I believe that it is in the risk-taking, in our willingness to be attached to other people, in our desire to have intimacy. Now, I don't necessarily mean sexual intimacy, although that certainly is a part of real emotional fulfillment for most of us, but risking attachment to other people, getting outside of ourselves, even if for a moment, and daring to let people know what we really are feeling and what our needs are. To move from a simple statement of I am and I have worth to I want to be with you. I want to have you be with me. I want to know you better and have you see me as the person that I am desiring to become and the person that I am right now. Sometimes we get uncomfortable, we use, when we talk about the spiritual dimension of our lives. For some of us, it's a reminder of things that we think we've left behind or that we don't want part of anymore. And I suspect that some of us here really haven't gotten over the hurt. We're not past the real grieving about the religion that we may have left behind. And what happens so often, we come here without fully dealing with that, and we wind up defining our religion in terms of what we don't believe. And if you think of it, perhaps that's a kind of survival mode for you to use. This is what I don't believe. This is what I don't accept. But the thriving is in that expression of what we do in fact believe and value and hold dear, the things that we're really committed to and that we're prepared to take action for. I would argue that every one of us, regardless of our notion of God or ultimate meaning or purpose, has spiritual yearnings, a need for some connectedness with the world, with the universe beyond, with those around us. The bottom line spiritually, for me at least, is to affirm life here and now, to acknowledge that what is happening is real and that we have some choice in the matter, that we are not just victims of history or circumstance or God or the universe, but that we are here and have a hand in our own destiny and the destiny of others, if we dare to risk and dare to choose. To move beyond that kind of surviving to thriving, to me, means to truly hallow the interdependent web of which we're a part, to recognize our responsibility beyond even the human realm, but to include the biological realm in its whole, the natural world. We have a hand in that as well. In the social realm, we need to be able to cultivate and maintain our individual friendships, to move beyond social isolation. And that, for me at least, is surviving. Thriving, then, is transcendence. That moving beyond our selfish, personal, parochial concerns and becoming more involved with purposes and programs and projects beyond our individual lives. What is the survival level for you socially? And what might you contrast in your life as thriving socially? I believe that this religious community should be a place where we can come and dare to be who we are, that we can find others like us in varying stages of growth, and that we encourage that and support one another. And at the very least, we have the opportunity to be cheerleaders for one another in the race of life. Well, finally, after considering the intellectual, the emotional, the spiritual, the social realms, there's the physical realm. And I think that this is where many of us New Year's get into trouble, and we experience the imbalance in life that can be so dangerous. Most of us who are New Year's get plenty of exercise above our shoulders. We're working our brains all the time. We're thinking and analyzing and discussing. We're creating. Sometimes we get confused and think that discussing means doing something about something. Well, it's a start, but it's in the acting. That's what counts. All that is to be celebrated and encouraged is this process of being with one another, sharing, encouraging one another, and most of it, as I say, is above the shoulders. Well, we go a little lower when we give each other a hug. I mean, we get into the physical realm a little bit, and I certainly encourage that. But I think we discount and we devalue the importance of our physical beings, and to our detriment. I can imagine a church of the future where we not only are attending to the aerobics of the mind, but also of the body, that it makes just as much sense that we have a gymnasium as a library. We need to have this balance, the mind, the body, the emotions, the spirituality, and the social dimensions. And in the physical realm, to move beyond survival, to truly thrive, we need to become more aware of what we put in our mouths and why. To recognize that for many of us, eating is not a matter of nourishment physically. It becomes a way for us to deal with our pain, our disappointment, our sense of loss. To have a balanced diet, to exercise, to be physical, to increase our lung capacity, that's what thriving is for many of us. How many of you here walk every day? Get out of the house and walk. For the rest of you, I remind you that there is no California statute that keeps you from doing that. You may recall in the movie L.A. Story, Steve Martin goes to visit his neighbor two doors down. He gets in his car to go there. It's not required by law. Of course, sometimes when the air is especially bad, we don't feel like walking outside. But there are other kinds of exercise. And the point is, we know now that it's not just cardiac exercise and doing the cardio workout. The strength training is important too. And so, in a way, it seems almost counter to what our culture has been about as you use, but I think we need to bring this into more balance. We need to do more physical things. How many of you, besides walking, skate? Do inline skating or roller skating? We've got a few here, and some of you, well, good for you. I hope you're wearing the pads when you're doing it. How about dancing? Square dancing, folk dancing. Dancing at home with whatever, is it dancing with the kids?
With a broom.
With a broom. Well, honey, we've got to talk about your social life. A broom. Oh, that's a good one. Do you lead? Well, I suspect that for some of us, the most exercise we get is running to the bathroom during the commercial breaks on television. Well, that's the survival level. It's not thriving. And some of you have heard or read my Laws for Harmonious Living. And one of the things that I do when I share these items with people is I talk about the value of skipping. How many here go skipping? Now, if you have a kid or a grandkid or some other kid, you can get away with this. And I actually heard someone on the radio recently who is now promoting this. Well, it's great exercise, you know, not only aerobically, but you cannot skip without a big smile on your face. Go out in the parking lot and try to skip and not laugh. And the nice thing is that not only does it put a smile on your face, everybody else gets a good chuckle too, because you probably look like a ninny. But you're a happy and you're a fit ninny, and who cares? To thrive, then, to move beyond merely surviving, we need to balance our past, our present, and our future. Many of us are dragged down. Our walking, our moving, our intellectual stimulation, and all the other dimensions are slowed down because we're still carrying so much of the past around with us. Stuff that has no bearing on what's going on today. Some of us are carrying with us the anger, and it is in our unwillingness to forgive, not just to forgive others, but to forgive ourselves, that often keeps us from thriving. Learning from the past, forgiving and letting go to move us from surviving to thriving, that can be our goal. And in the present, the living of this moment, whether we like it or not, to choose it as ours and take responsibility for us gives us power. To live this moment, this day, as fully as possible moves us into the realm of thriving. And in the future, as we plan for it, what can we do to ensure our thriving? You may recall that John Lennon said that life is what happens while you're busy making up plans.
It's
just like that. But planning is still important. Perhaps the most important thing of all for us is to set goals. Simple, clear goals. They need to be balanced. They need to take into account all of those dimensions of our lives that we talked about here. The intellectual, the emotional, the spiritual, the social, and the physical. The goals need to be specific and concrete. They need to be measurable. They need to be realistic. And of course, they need to be within our real power to make them happen. Now, how many of you set goals every day? Now you know who to go to get help in setting your goals if you don't do that. And you probably can go to them and get more work done because they already know how to do it. They set the goals, and that's a very important start. Do you write them down? Write them down? How many of you write them in pen? Now, this is where I've learned over the years, and Al, though you referred to me as this young man, I ordered off the senior menu at IHOP the other day, so there's a bit of reality slapping me in my 55-year-old face. I write them in pencil, and I encourage that. Those of you who write them with pens, maybe you're more determined. Maybe you're better at fulfilling them, but what I like about the pencil is that if I never get to it, I can just erase it. I don't have to be reminded that I'm a loser and I didn't get it done. And in fact, I would argue that the eraser, small and humble as it is probably one of the greatest inventions in human history. But regardless of whether you write the goals down in pen or pencil or you just keep them in your head, the idea is that you set goals, that you challenge yourself, you recognize that the opportunities are available every given day. And that's what contributes to thriving. How many of you set goals for the week? How about for the month? Or the year? Well, some of us call those New Year's resolutions. Try the for the decade? You make goals? Well, good for you. What's your goal right now in this room? To stay awake for the rest of the service? Well, I'd like to think that's just surviving. Maybe something just a little more challenging is in order. One of the problems with our goal setting when we do it in the form of resolutions is that we don't make them specific and clear enough. We say, for example, I'm going to get more exercise. Now, that's not as effective as saying, in order for me to get more exercise, I'm going to walk for a half hour each day. The more specific we can be, the more likely we're going to be fulfilling them. Now, what about today? As you think about your goals for today, right here, right now, is there anyone who has a goal for today that they'd like to share? Yes, Gail.
I'm obsessive compulsive. I have many goals every day.
Well, the beating of Compulsives Anonymous, by the way, is at 8:02 this evening.
An hour walk of speech.
Really?
Yes.
Is that a daily? Or?
No, Sunday afternoon. Between 5 and 6 at the Beach.
Don't go looking for her. It's her time. It's her time. Any other goals for today you want to share? Yes.
Grandson's all-star basketball game.
All right. You're going to be there.
Yep.
One of the ways that I found most effective in reaching the goals is simple and profound. And I would invite everybody right now to just imagine something that you want to accomplish this week. Pick a goal. Maybe you'll challenge yourself a little bit. Instead of going for thriving, Think surviving, think thriving for a moment. Go for it. Pick a thriving goal that isn't beyond the realm of possibility. Something that can be achieved, but something that might take you outside of your safe and comfortable zone. Take you beyond what's too easy, something that's going to really challenge you. Think about a goal for this week, something that's specific and concrete, something measurable so that when you've accomplished it, you'll know that you've actually done it. Think about a goal for a moment. Now, what I'd like to have you do is to think about the goal and imagine that you've just achieved the goal. See yourself completing whatever it is that you are going to set out to do. Visualize yourself not only completing the goal, but I want you to be aware for a moment of how you feel when you complete that goal. What kind of emotion do you have after you've achieved what it is you challenge yourself with? As we use our subconscious to visualize, to help us with this, not only do we learn how it is that we can bring it about, but we connect on that deeper feeling level. And that's where the power is. Most of us who do visualizations don't get the most bang for the buck because we don't attach the emotion, the sense of completion to it. It's a very minor thing, but I think you'll find that it really makes a difference. And out of this power comes change and transformation. The emotional attachment we add like that is the fuel for the engine. If you see yourself already having done it, your subconscious doesn't know the difference. And you will act as though you already have, and you will reduce the stress and things that may keep you normally from achieving those goals. And when doing this, you have dramatically increased your likely completion of the task. We have such tremendous potential within every one of us for growth, for achieving the goals that we set out to attain, the ones that we really want to realize, and we can use this power of connecting the intellectual, the cognitive, and the feeling. And I've seen extraordinary results with this very simple process. I do this when I come here on Sunday. I see this whole service before it happens. I imagine myself seeing people coming in, greeting them, feeling the energy that I get from that kind of interaction. I imagine the whole service. I see myself speaking. I see the interacting that goes on. And I attach to it the feeling that I'm accepted, I'm cared about, I'm respected, and want to hear what I have to say. That's a challenge for me to believe sometimes, but it really helps. I leave you with this closing thought, a question actually. What is it that you want to do today that will allow you to experience joy, no matter what your limitations? What will allow you to experience joy rather than simply avoiding pain? What is it that's going to excite you, enliven you, give you that sense of joy and fulfillment rather than just avoiding discomfort? The thriving is in the joy. It's the expectation that good things are possible and indeed probable if we're willing to take responsibility for it happening. The surviving is the avoidance of that which we don't want. And most likely, we'll wind up getting stuck with because we're focusing on it in that way. What we try to get rid of, we get stuck with. Let us look then for opportunities in this very religious community to encourage the thriving rather than just surviving. And we can do that as a congregation, especially when we do our budget planning, our thinking about our goals for the year. I can't tell you how many congregations I've dealt with who believe that they should budget for survival. What are we likely to get? What's the least we need to survive? And that's a formula for stagnation and death. This community, a dozen years ago, recognized the difference between surviving and thriving. You set your goals in terms of what your dreams are, what you want to achieve, and then you find the means to do it. Let's not set our goals in this religious community in terms of what do we need just to get by. Strive to thrive. Honor our dreams, our commitments, our aspirations. What is it that we can and will do together to bring the greatest good? The choices, indeed, are ours. For those of you who have fulfilled your goal and have remained awake, any questions or comments? Yes?
Well, this subject matter has always been a, you know, a central issue in my life, as I'm sure everyone else can identify with. And what I found is that there's a thin line between when you're thriving and just surviving. And the situation that's best is to be on one side more often than the other side. And an analogy, as an illustration that I've thought of and talked about in the past is kind of picturing ourselves as one of the three little pigs. And there's a wolf trying to get into our particular home. And in reality, it doesn't matter what you do to brace up your home and get a brick home or whatever. In today's world, that wolf's going to get in eventually. So I find that I can't live my life just trying to board up my house and keeping the wolf out. What I've got to do is I've got to go outside that wall, kind of cross that line, and spend time over there trying to capture that wolf, get the other little gang of pigs to go after it, or whatever it takes. But I've got to go after that wolf. And there's a thin line there. And so to me, it's like a central decision. Which side am I going to be on? Now, I'm not perfect, and there is a balance. But if I can be on the other side in all areas of my life more often, I'm going to do it a lot better.
Thank you. Yes?
I appreciate your sermon wrestling with the big issues here. I'm going to mention something which will seem like a joke, but it really isn't. About 5 years ago, our older daughter absolutely threw a hissy fit and insisted that we must get a dog. And a dog, I mean, I grew up with a dog, whatever, strikes me as being responsibility with our reward, whatever. But all right, so we get the dog. Meanwhile, our daughter has moved on. She's a young woman. She's living outside. The dog remains, right? The dog is bringing the wolf into the house, so there is a thought. But I don't know about intellectually, but I want to say this. Socially and emotionally and physically, having the dog has really been a way to bring joy into our lives. And I tell you, the paper, I was reading this, I was astonished to find this out. Person who owns a dog from an actuarial point of view will live 3 years longer than a person who doesn't. For some of it, I'm sure it's just, oh, well, I got to take the dog for a walk. I work at home, I'm by myself. Well, I'm not by myself because there's the dog, right? And sometimes that dog comes to my studio and he says, it's time to play. I don't know what you're doing up here, but it's time to play.
It's a very bright dog, too.
Or whatever, you know. And so I know it seems crazy, but in a way, it's just a very simple thing. But having that dog around is exactly, I think, the thing that you're talking about. Like the difference between, I'm just getting through the day, and it's like, wow, I had some sort of an experience today that reminded me of it's a beautiful day outside or whatever.
I have two dogs, and I'm missing them a great deal right now. Yes, Ed?
We raised dogs when I was a kid. We had Bedlam Terriers and Cocker Spaniels, and they were great to raise, and it was a lot of fun whenever we had them, and it was a lot of fun all the time. And I just have a few comments to make. And I think one of the things that I want to make a comment about is that if you change the comments a little bit instead of just the same comments all the time, and make some of the comments instead of just the same things, make some of the comments about the BDP colors up there, and make comments about the beauty of the sunshine outside there, and so forth and so on, and the beauty of the sun coming up, and the sun, and as the sun, and the world turns around, and so forth and so on, then it rises and falls, and so forth and so on. It just rises and falls.
And it's good to take note of that.
Yes.
And to be aware, and to shift our focus.
Yes.
One more, and Uncle Al is going to come up here and take over. Go ahead.
I just want to thank you so much for last week and this week's sermon. You really, really reached me. And I have to tell you that I was struck by what a loss the Unitarian Church is having and will always have by your leaving the pulpit. You have such insight and such empathy. Really, really thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I knew I couldn't die last week. I had to be here to hear that. Thank you.